Good morning. You are listening to Poco and Boco. I am your host, Tracy Jones.
And I'm your host, Nikhil Mankekar. Today's guest is Michelle Simpson, a professor at CU. Michelle, why don't we start off and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay, where would you like me to start?
How'd you get to Colorado? What are you doing here in Boulder?
Okay, that could be the whole show. But how I got to Colorado is this. When I was in graduate school in Indiana University in Bloomington, I was part of a study group. And a member of the study group had this beautiful map up of Boulder, specifically, because she had gotten her undergraduate degree in psychology at CU. And I remember thinking to myself at that point, one of these days, I'm going to visit that place. Mm. I grew up in New York. And so Colorado seemed very far away. And even though I had traveled some, I had that very kind of East Coast attitude that there was nothing of value between New York and California. So I had flown over certain parts of the country. But anyway, I lived in Jamaica, West Indies, for about 5 years. And when I was there, I did a lot of traveling. And I decided to travel to the place in the picture. So I came and I visited. And I liked it, and I thought this might suit me. But I left, went back to Jamaica, came back to the United States, and decided I'm going to go back, see what happens. So I stayed in the Boulder Inn on Broadway for about 3 or 4 days, convinced a landlord to rent me a place, found a job, and the rest is sort of history.
Wow.
A long history, because I've been in Colorado since 1980.
Wow, that's amazing. So you are a professor at CU?
You know what? Let me just deconstruct that a little bit.
Okay.
I'm a senior instructor.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think professor, you think tenure, you think research.
Mm-hmm.
That's not me. I have done a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways you get to teach at a university is if you have a seminal degree. I have a seminal degree. I'm a lawyer. And so as a result, I'm permitted to, again, teach at the university.
So what do you instruct? What kind of courses?
You know, all sorts. My history really places me in what we now call women and gender studies. Back in the day, we called it women's studies.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my entree to the university. But since then, I've kept that connection with women and gender studies, but I'm all over the place. And so I teach in what they call at CU, a residential academic program where students can live and learn in the same location. CU is a big school. We have 30,000 people.
Wow.
And this year we admitted almost 6,000 first year students. And so as a way to try to condense the university or make the first year experience a bit more intimate, CU years ago created residential academic programs. So students take classes outside of where they live, but they also take classes within the same space where
they live.
Like
in the dorm room?
You got it.
Dorm area?
So in the dorm I'm in, for example, we have 4 classrooms. We offer a whole slate of courses that fulfill requirements on campus, and it just makes for a much more intimate experience.
Mm-hmm.
First-year students often find themselves in 200, 300-person lectures, taking other required classes with other first-year students. My classes are capped at about 19,
mm-hmm.
so it makes for a much more intimate experience. The students get to know one another. They get to know their professors, and so I've been a part of that for a while. I also teach in a summer program called PEAK, which is a summer bridge program for first-generation students and underrepresented students.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also teach in another program called SASE,
which
is? Is Student Academic Success Center. Mm-hmm. And so I teach there as well. And again, you find a lot of underrepresented students and students of color in that program. So I'm in various places at the university.
And Michelle, talk a little bit about PEAK and say some of the challenges that listeners might not know that first-generation students will face on campus, especially one, as you described, as big as CU,
mm-hmm.
and how those can be impediments to success and how
how
you mitigate those in your mentorship.
Or try to.
Yeah.
It's funny, we're having this conversation today. On Tuesday, in my ethics class, I had a dialogue. And CU has a dialogues program. You may be familiar with it. It's called the CU Dialogues Program. And it exists to kind of bridge the distance between different constituents on campus who, but for the dialogues program, might never come together. So I had a dialogue about community. What does community mean? And my one class where I, again, hosted the dialogue, it's predominantly first-gen students and students of color. And I don't want to speak for my students, but many of them talk about feeling underrepresentation writ large when they start their studies in the fall. So in the summer, if you're on CU's campus in the summer, you'd have a very different sense of CU's demographics because you have a lot of athletic programs, you have a lot of other summer bridge programs, a lot's going on.
So is
but it's very
diversity?
Colorful. Oh,
more
yeah.
More diversity
yeah.
in the
very
summer.
Very colorful in the
okay.
summer. And when school starts up, it's like, what happened? And so what many of my students would tell you who find themselves in some of those programs and or even who don't participate in those programs, as I heard on Tuesday, one student said, she's about to graduate in December, and she said, my hope is that I'll come back and visit, and there'll just be many more students of color here, she said, because it can be a very lonely experience. I was talking to a member of the staff the other day about developing a group for young black women specifically, because we're losing them. Mm-hmm. So they get accepted, they're here, but trying to retain them is a very difficult thing to do. And many of them talk about just feeling very isolated and just not seeing themselves in their classes, not seeing themselves in the material in the classes, just not seeing themselves socially. Mm-hmm. And I teach a lot of first-year students. I love teaching first-year students, but first year is a challenge. Mm-hmm. That's when people are transitioning from high school mm-hmm. to university life. And the social aspect of it can't be underestimated. And so I had one student come to me a couple of weeks ago, and she said, it feels like everybody on my floor is joining a sorority, and I'm the kind of odd person out. Or when I attend parties on campus, I'm the odd person out somehow. Mm-hmm. Or if I try to join various groups, because we're always trying to encourage students to join mm-hmm. and get involved in extracurriculars. But oftentimes they just feel like the odd person out, and it gets tiresome. Mm-hmm. I had a student say on Tuesday what she likes about being with other Latinx students is she doesn't have to explain. And she said, because sometimes it just gets tiresome. In classes, she feels like she's explaining a lot. Then she's explaining, you know, on her off time, and she just gets tired of it. So it's nice to be able to relax.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know. I mean, I attended CU as well.
And, oh, did you? Okay.
And that is a dynamic that plays out due to the lack of representation is even well-intentioned professors will raise issues around diversity and race. And then the one student is looked to not only as being the sole representative and educator mm-hmm. on it, but then a dynamic of pushback and it almost becomes a debate mm-hmm. and classes can become, you know, people ganging up, especially if someone is speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm. And it's a hard one. I try my best to pull my students in and see them outside of the classroom, excuse me, especially students of color. I didn't attend a predominantly white university. I attended an HBCU, a historically black college and university. So our experiences are a little different. And being a professor on a campus is one thing. You're mm-hmm. seen as being in a position of authority, mm-hmm. and as lonely and isolating as that can be, I can only imagine, you know, what it's like living there and, again, being there nonstop. Mm. When my classes are over, I go home. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficult one. And so we're working on it. We're trying, and we try new things all the time. But, yeah, I can't say that I have the answers. Yeah. But I can say my heart's in it and that we're working on it.
Recently, both you and Nikhil were featured on a panel regarding hate crimes here in the city of Boulder. And I was in attendance for that for a brief period of time. And it was so refreshing to simply see someone who looked like me in that huge venue. I believe there may have been a handful mm-hmm. of people of color, let alone women of color, mm-hmm. let alone women of color with a voice. So mm-hmm. that was very refreshing to me.
You know what was interesting about that? I have to say one of my observations, I'm used to, I've lived a long time, and I'm old, in other words, and so I'm used to being in spaces where it's me, mm-hmm. or me and maybe one or two other people. I'm used to it, and when I say that, I don't say it proudly, mm-hmm. but it happens often enough, and when I walked in that space that evening, I looked around and I thought, you know, Michelle, you promised yourself, you aren't going to do this anymore. In other words, where I wasn't going to find myself in a space where it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
I had made a promise that I would participate, that I would do it. And so I said that to myself. That was my mantra that night. I said, you're going to do this because you promised yourself that you weren't going to do this, but you made a promise to someone else that you would do this particular panel. And I did. But I have to tell you, I remember sitting down at one point and I was just exhausted before it began because I looked around the room and I just thought, I'm tired of being in these spaces. I'm tired of being in these spaces and I'm tired of receiving the smile, you know, the, you know, we're doing our best to make you feel welcome smile because it wasn't working. What do they call it? Virtual signaling?
I don't know. But
somebody introduced that phrase to me the other day because I had done a whole segment in one of my classes, my Women Literature in the Arts class on smiling. Mm-hmm. And kind of going in depth about smiling. Mm-hmm. And I was, again, calling myself out because I'd gotten out of an elevator at CU in one of our large buildings. And I got out of the elevator and there was a group of, you know, white staff and faculty. And I found myself smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, why am I smiling? And I knew why. Because so I wanted to appear non-threatening.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
And so when I walked into the room, everybody was smiling at me. And I just thought, oh, please don't smile. Because in some ways it was making it worse.
Yes.
Well, it's a cue.
Do you find that happens here in Boulder?
Mm-hmm.
People are trying to show themselves so friendly that they have the eerie Cheshire cat grin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little disturbing.
And that's what somebody introduced that phrase, virtual signaling, that what it means is when people are trying to signal that they're okay.
Okay.
That they're not racist, that they're safe. Mm-hmm. And
you know,
I just thought, I don't know who began that process. But again, I was trying to unpack smiling, not just from a gender perspective, but also from a perspective of race and just the roles we play. And I had to, as I said, unpack that for myself. I thought, because I got off the elevator smiling. I mean, who's in an elevator smiling?
It's also, I mean, to virtual signaling, it isn't just signaling themselves. It's kind of putting you on the spot as a test to see, is this someone threatening? Will you smile back to make themselves feel, okay, I can feel safe and at ease around someone.
Right. Yeah, but when you don't smile back because you're in your own space, I mean, nobody deserves a smile. That's a whole nother day of discussion. But if you are going about your day and you're having a rough one, nobody is entitled to a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And when people come at you with that virtual signaling, my kids and I call it the creepy, sneaky smile.
I used to have a friend who called it way back when, because I lived here for 14 years. She used to call it the nerdy Boulder smile.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought about it one way or the other, but I saw her at the panel.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen her in about 20 years.
And
I remember thinking, oh, yeah, she called it the nerdy Boulder smile. Yeah.
You know,
so, Diane, if you're listening, I just quoted you.
Well, it's asking you to put on, it's the performance aspect we have to put on to make people feel at ease in order to navigate those spaces with kind of the least amount of resistance or putting out ourselves in the least amount of danger at times.
And it's just exhausting.
It is,
you know,
so
because
tiring.
I do so much of it as a teacher. I do so much of it in my life. And so, yeah, that morning I just caught myself. And it was hours before I was going to deliver a lecture on smiling.
Wow. Well, I just have to say again, it was one of those days. It was rough, a really rough day that day. And it was wonderful. I'm glad you made that appearance because it really bolstered my soul as one of the few Pocos in Boco.
Oh. Well, thank you for saying that.
You're welcome. It's not often you get to thank people for being in your white space. On campus, are you doing something around stories?
Oh, so what I was talking about that night, and one of the things I put out to members of the audience, is that I'm interested in collecting stories because I think that's who we are, essentially. That's all we are our stories. But since I sometimes do work with the CU Dialogues program, I'm always interested in creating conversations like we're having now between individuals whose paths, as I said earlier, might never have crossed, but for that panel.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never met the two of you,
but
for, again, that opportunity that evening. And those are, for me, some of the best conversations that take place, especially if they're facilitated well and, you know, people come with, you know, at least open minds, open hearts somewhat around any topic. I always think, again, talking can be a good thing, and even sometimes not talking can be as good. So I often will say to my students, if you're in a room with someone and they seem really angry or they seem enraged even, that's a way of communicating. And it's also a way of saying, I want to communicate this to you. It's when people stop talking that we want to be concerned, mm-hmm. or they stop communicating mm-hmm. anything. You know, anger can be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to KGNU Community Radio. This is Poco and Boco, People of Color in Boulder County. I'm your host, Nikhil Mankekal.
And I'm Tracy Jones. Today, our guest is Stephanie Sampson.
Michelle,
I'm mm-hmm. so sorry. Mm-hmm. Please forgive
I'll take
me.
The other name.
I'm sorry. I was trying to remember Sampson. Anyways, uh-huh. Michelle Sampson.
Simpson. Mm-hmm.
Simpson. Mm-hmm. And we're just talking about being in Boulder.
So, Michelle, talk a little bit about what you're seeing, you know, off campus and mm-hmm. citywide. There's just often a split mm-hmm. between things. I think on campus, mm-hmm. there's a racialized experience on campus mm-hmm. and then challenges. And you talked about some ways you're working to deal mm-hmm. with that. But then, you know, you invite students in as you know, it can kind of be the only channel, the only way that diversity comes to Boulder in mm-hmm. some ways, especially for young people who mm-hmm. not young professionals yet. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of feedback about people's experiences around the city, and mm-hmm. I wanted to know, you know, what are your students talking to say to you about how they feel in the city and challenges they have?
I've been doing some work in the past year or so with student athletes. Yeah. On campus and talking about a highly visible, invisible group.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, so they really wear that mantle. And I remember sitting in a circle in a conversation, and a member of CU's football team spoke up, and he talked about being in Walmart here and being called out across the store where somebody just yelled across the store. So what position do you play? Well, he wasn't in uniform. He was just a black man in Walmart, or should have just been mm-hmm. a black man in Walmart, mm-hmm. but he wasn't. And he turned and he looked because everybody was focused on him. And he said in that moment, he didn't know quite what to say, because the truth is, he is part of the football team. The truth is, he does have a position. But the truth also was, he didn't know this person. They didn't mm-hmm. know him. But just made an assumption, because if you're black, male, and look the mm-hmm. part of a football player, you are a football player. And even if you don't look the part, I hear from many of my black male students, you're still associated with some athletic endeavor, because that's how you got to see you. You must have gotten to see you because you were recruited. So that happens on campus, mm-hmm. but that also happens off campus. For my some of my other students, especially many of my female students, some of whom are student athletes, but some who are not, have just talked about a feeling of tension, feeling sometimes over-policed. Mm-hmm. And when I say over-policed, being stopped mm-hmm. or being questioned, mm-hmm. or when black students have parties in various places, in mm-hmm. Boulder, off campus now, mm-hmm. Where, again, the police are often called.
Quickly.
And, yep. you know, they are disturbing the peace or accused of doing that. But, and we all know that students do like to party, and students mm-hmm. can get loud, but they feel overly watched, overly mm. observed, and overly policed as a result. And they always say, yeah, we have a good time until the police show up, because there's an expectation that they will.
Wow.
For some of my students, especially many of my Muslim students, feeling stigmatized from wearing hijab, mm-hmm. and students who do have discussed with me being chased or mm. being called out mm-hmm. In the streets yeah. from mm-hmm. cars or people passing by on bicycles or running by
I've had that
and feeling that that's okay.
I've had
feeling
that that's okay also.
Yeah, so I hear all types of experiences. Many of my students decide that it's better to stay on campus,
go out and
just because, not that they feel so safe on campus, I want that understood,
mm-hmm.
but that it's a discreet space. So going out into the city mm-hmm. feels so much more out of their control.
Mm-hmm.
Open yourself up
exactly.
to a lot
yes. Exactly. Yeah. And so many, when I talk about, oh, have you been here? Or did you go here? Have you visited here? Mm-mm. And it's also fascinating to me, because the majority of my students are from the metropolitan area.
But they come to Boulder and are feeling safer on campus than walking through the city streets.
Mm-hmm. That absolutely. So that's an interesting dynamic, because I'd say the bulk of my students are from the Aurora, Denver area.
Wow.
And yeah, they know nothing about Boulder.
So they don't. Nobody.
They don't venture out.
That
especially the young women.
That is such a loudly, profoundly, disgustingly sad statement.
Yeah.
Well, what I've gotten, I mean, I've worked with the graduate students of College, mm-hmm. Black Student Alliance, and friends of mine in the past, and so I'm also in the city, the chair of the city's Human Relations Commission. Mm-hmm. So I've always, you know, trying to find out ways we can work on inclusion and improve safety of people mm-hmm. in the city, mm-hmm. especially students as they venture out. But what they've often told me is that they don't even stay on campus mm-hmm. on the weekends. It's because it's in the metropolitan.
They go to Denver, they go home.
Mm-hmm. They can be among the people they knew, and they feel, again, that sense of community. Mm-hmm. That's the only way they feel that sense of community.
Right.
As a long-term resident of Boulder, I've lived here since 97. And I will confess to having what I call MST, melanated skating therapy, where I drive all the way to Aurora to Skate City.
Oh, I know exactly where you are.
to not be the only one just mm-hmm. for a little while. Mm-hmm. Because as you said earlier, the pressure, what people that are in the majority do not realize is when you're different, there is just an energy and a lot of pressure on you. You're under the glass, you're under a microscope, and that begins to wear on you. Mm-hmm. And Boulder wants to tout itself as inclusive and welcoming. I want to challenge Boulder. It's not so welcoming for people of color. Mm-hmm. It's not comfortable. It's a difficult place to be, but I'm stubborn, so I ain't moving.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I think about living here, because I did for 14 years, and a lot of it was fabulous. I mm-hmm. really enjoyed it. I made some just long-term friendships and had lots of opportunities here. So that's the one side of it. The other side of that was, again, and I remember very clearly, I have had my worst kind of racialized experiences here. I remember one day, I don't know if it still exists, down around the diagonal, there used to be an Albertsons over there. And it's probably gone now.
It's
motor
like
vehicles was
center.
Over there.
Yeah,
but anyway,
yeah,
and maybe motor vehicles
now.
Is still there. It's a gym.
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
But I remember going to Albertsons one day because it was very close to where I lived when I lived in Boulder. And a truck circled me. I had come out of the store and it circled me in such a way that I couldn't move. I could only walk a few feet. And then the truck came in closer.
Mm-mm.
And closer. And so, again, signaling to me, if you make a false move, you're going to be hit. And I'll never forget that I looked in the distance and I saw a black man going into Albertsons and I looked at him. I mean, I didn't know him. I didn't call mm-hmm. him. I couldn't speak because mm-hmm. I was just stunned, in mm-hmm. shock, and scared.
Afraid, yeah.
And scared. And I looked at him and I realized, I thought, this person in the truck would have never done this to him. Mm-mm. I knew it had to do with race and it had to do with gender because mm-hmm. he thought he could get away with it with me, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was nothing I could do without getting hit
mm-hmm.
by the truck. But I had numerous experiences like that, and when I share them sometimes with my students, they're shocked.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, Boulder is often considered by students who are not students of color as just this paradise. Because students come from all over the country, typically,
mm-hmm.
Who are not students of color, and they just think it's a paradise. And I always try to explain, it's a beautiful place.
It is.
Some wonderful things happen here. You can tap into some excellent resources. Got it.
But
as I said that night at the panel, this is not an exceptional place. It is like every other place. And if people think they're exceptional, or the place they're living in is an exceptional place, then we can never have real conversations about our experiences as people of color, because we're going to continue to be marginalized and our stories will be, again, marginalized as
mm-hmm.
well
mm-hmm.
and not deemed valid. And that's a piece that I have very little patience for.
Oh, I agree. There's been so many occasions where someone will ask a question about my experience just here.
Mm-hmm.
And when you begin to relate stories and experiences, their disbelief and basically challenging you, like, no, that really didn't happen. That couldn't happen. Not here in Boulder.
Or it must have been.
It's always not in Boulder.
Or you're perceiving it wrong. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. always some other. It's not.
It's a misunderstanding.
Really yeah, it's a misunderstanding. It was a misunderstanding the way he circled you in that car. You were misunderstanding. He was just driving in
circles. He was just asking for directions.
Or I was misunderstood the time when the campus produced a pamphlet for students of color, mm-hmm. and it was supposed to be a helpful pamphlet of just different places you could go, for example, where you could go to church services, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, and where more people of color were welcomed, et cetera. And I remember they had a list of hair salons, and there was one that was really close to me, really, because I used to live right off of Valmont and 28th, and it was in walking distance of my house, and I was so excited. Uh-huh. And I remember going over there, and I was excited. I'd made my appointment, and the person who met me was white. I expected her to be white. Mm-hmm. I was fine with all of that. But I got in and I told her, you know, what I was interested in. And she said, oh, don't worry about it. I have lots of black clients. I can make you look normal, too.
Ooh.
I'll never forget. And I said,
I got to go.
I took my words. It took my words. And I'm never at a loss for words. Mm-hmm. But it took my words. And I said, you know what? I think I forgot something in my car. And I just never went back. Because I was so floored and stunned by that comment. I, you know, went in thinking, oh, this is going to be exciting. I don't have to go to Denver anymore. I found someone who knows what they're doing. And I was just excited. But when she used the normal word, I thought I was,
wow.
You know, and I just thought, oh my gosh. And we have this on a pamphlet. So I spoke very loudly about making some changes.
There.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Making some changes to that. So as I said, it can be somewhat discouraging. It can be somewhat discouraging.
Well, Michelle, it looks like we are out of time for this show, but would you like to stay and we could continue the conversation?
We'll do
the
second
episode. We could do a part two.
Well, it looks like we'll be doing a part two with Michelle Simpson, so stay tuned for that. You were listening to Poco and Boco, People of Color in Boulder County on KGNU Community Radio. Today's guest is Michelle Simpson from CU, and I am your host, Nikhil Mankekal.
And I'm Tracy Jones. You have listened to Poco and Boco.
Have a good day. Thank you for listening.